Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Time now for Laird and Fitzy. Ken Laird and Nick Fitzy Stevens right here on EEI.
Pal Fitzy, welcome to the second year of the decade, you son of a bitch.
No better way to kick it off, guy. Hey, considering how last year sucked from sports to sickness, from the interoffice to the stadiums and beyond, nowhere to go but up.
And by the way, this quick aside before we get into the main topic of the day, I was thinking about how bad sports have been without fans. It's been brutal.
Stinks.
It's just sports without fans sucks. It just sucks.
Stinks.
And unfortunately, I don't want to start off on a negative note. I guess by probably that's the norm on this program. But we got 6 months of that ahead of us. I mean, when are there going to be fans in seats? As you see it right now, I mean, the vaccine rollout is going swimmingly well.
Oh, spectacular.
So that's great news. But, I mean, we're looking, it's like another three-month sludge of this, at least.
Bare minimum. What you saw last night, there were 3,000 people at the Superdome for Notre Dame, Alabama, then you had 25,000 at the, for Clemson, Ohio State, and there were 25,000 for the Rose Bowl, which was played in Jerry World, and that was like at a quarter cap. That's the most you're going to see, tops. NBA games, empty, fake sound. Baseball, maybe partial attendance. Hockey, maybe you and I can score some sweet ticks to the Bruins game at Tahoe in February. But otherwise, we can't. And it just, like, you get duped into thinking once you hear, like, vaccine is rolling out, you got AstraZeneca, Moderna, Pfizer, like they're hitting the trail, like this is going to happen. And
Sputnik 6 or whatever the Russian version is.
Like, yeah.
You're going to get some sports league is going to have to start moving the needle in terms of working the right people to get vaccinated players. I mean, that's the Wiggy route.
I'd consider giving up my vaccination if I knew that it could provide for more entertainment or the ability to go to a game or do anything different than what we do, which is stand awkwardly around each other, a full human's distance away, wearing a surgical mask, lifting it up every once in a while to laugh, sip, or snack. Come on!
Be that as it may, as far as the state of the franchise is on the field, here's my brilliant observation here. We are headed for a decade like the 90s in New England, aren't we? I mean, this is becoming like celebrating other teams' titles as your best bet for experiencing joy, like the Ray Bourque and Roger Clemens end of the decade.
And so now that's going to be Tampa Bay for us?
I don't know. I mean, it's just, not to look back on 2020, because nobody wants to, but you saw Mookie Betts leave, you saw Tom Brady leave, obviously, and now Zdeno Chara to end the year, which is, I hate to throw that in. I know Steve Buckley did in his Athletic column. It's really a separate case. I don't think Chara in his current state is really in the class of those other two who left. But he is a future Hall of Famer, so there was a decision to be made there.
In terms of his overall impact and legacy, yes-ish. In terms of his ability to contribute now, absolutely not. But to be on the doorstep of departing the most memorably miserable year of our lives, and then to have, like, just like have 2020 reach through the door, just be like, oh, sorry, forgot him. Char, no!
Yeah, but I think it's the right call, actually. I think that's...
Is it? Yes. I agree. I wasn't heartbroken by it. It was just another emotional gut punch.
And it's possible that the Capitals could win a cup and you could watch him be some part of it, some bit
if
part.
If he raises his second cup next to Ovechkin and the Bruins are home, and if Tuca has another subpar and playoff performance and then we're left debating here, there, and everywhere, certainly not in the bars and at the Garden or wherever else we'd want to be, like, was it the defense or was it Tuca? I say it's Tuca. That's the easy thing to do. Yeah, there was no one creating a shield in front of him, no one blocking him. So, what do you want? I mean, it's likely someone's going to do it.
Yeah, and Mookie already won one, and I don't think Brady will do it, but just sizing up his current playoff path after the Lions totally laid down, I mean, they've locked up the 5 seed, basically. The Bucks will be the 5 seed in the NFC.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to get the worst playoff team possible in the winner of the NFC East,
yep,
which will be the former Washington Redskins, now the Washington football team.
And the only fun will be if the Giants win the division, so Brady has to go exercise that demon on the way to wherever he ends up in this postseason.
True. I guess that's your best. If you're rooting against Brady, that's probably your best. But he's going to win that first round game. They'll beat either of those teams.
No, he's going to win more than that first round game.
Well, and then they might. I mean, possibly depending on how the seeds play out, he would get the Packers. I guess coming off the bye, which is not an easy game. But now that they lost Bakhtiari. All
that's
bets
bad
are off.
News, man.
That's
the
terrible
news
for them.
Highest paid left tackle. The two highest paid left tackles in football this year. Both out.
Right.
But Bakhtiari's bad news. So much of the Packers offense is predicated around that guy just locking it up and pushing people out of the way.
So I could totally see Brady back in the NFC title game against the Saints or the Seahawks, the winner of that game. That's what it looks like.
So could I. So are you ready for this?
Yeah.
I've been saying it now for the last 2 weeks. Said it again before Monday night kickoff. I said it after the Monday night curb stomping. Super Bowl 55, Bills, Bucks.
No, Bills are not going to make this.
Are you kidding me? Are you nuts?
No.
No, are you? You wouldn't
Chiefs
even
are going to walk in. That's not even
no,
a debate.
Guy, they were a they were a young hoo-coo kick away from going to overtime
Bills
against
can't
the
stop
visiting
the
Falcons.
Bills cannot stop the run.
The Chiefs can't run.
Well, they're not going to get to the
They don't
Chiefs.
Have Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
I think
Le'Veon Bell looks like a shadow of his former self. They may as well see if they can get Priest Holmes on the phone or maybe any of the other great fantasy backs of the last 15 years, for God's sake.
The Bills won't beat the Titans if it comes down to that.
Yes, they can.
Yes,
they can. Did you watch Monday night? That could 29. It was not that close. I know. That's the sad part. Who did they play Monday?
Well, I mean, you nailed it. You're the one guy on the final Patriots prediction board, 7-9. You saw this coming. Bill, the more this week has played out, Belichick, you rewind. What's the lasting quote of 2020, Fitzy? It is, we sold out.
Mm-hmm.
From Bill Belichick, explaining the Charlie Weiss interview on Sirius XM radio, which was early November or late October.
When things started getting weird, he had fumbled against Buffalo, and all of a sudden...
I think before that. I think it was after
no,
the blowout
that was November
to the
1st.
Niners.
Oh, that was after the blowout to the Niners, because the Buffalo fumble was the day after Halloween.
Okay. All right, well, whatever it was. It was in that stretch of losing three in a row. And Belichick, we should have... I mean, that was a big quote, and we talked a lot about it.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, he knew they were cooked, right? Belichick knew at that time he was making excuses. He saw it. They just did not have the talent to compete. That was it.
Wasn't looking good.
That was the quote of the year. And they were in a spiral out of control. The question I would have, as we sit here with the Bruins now losing Char, the season will start up. Celtics are in a 3-3 funk, as we kind of predicted them to start the year.
Yeah, but I mean, everybody hot taking the Celtics, like they're at least a player or two away. What are they doing? They should be better than, like, it's going to take time. They're not at least 30 games for this team to figure out who they are, for Kemba to come back, Pritchard to ascend, Tatum's doing his thing. I'm okay
with
that.
For Kemba to come back. It's what it's become.
20 minutes a night would be a score for $32 million a year.
Which organization of the Big Four in Boston, in New England, currently deserves the most criticism? At 617-779-7937. In particular, and when you look at Brady, Mookie, and Chara leaving, if you were going to rank those three, who gets the worst of it? And when should the ownership groups speak out about the current state of affairs, in particular the Krafts, which I think becomes an interesting talker now. When does Bob Kraft or Jonathan speak? When's the last time they spoke? I mean, it's been a long time.
Since we've heard an official statement from the desk of RKK?
Correct.
Now, it was Monday night. I was down the stadium doing the usual streaming pregame show for the fans on Pats.com. And I saw walking out in the field after both teams had been out there, done their thing, and they all went back in before the national anthem, and there was just one person walking across
the
field.
So Bon Jovi waking Bob up in the bar.
Bob, what? So it was RKK. Well, you can see the Air Force One's a million miles away.
Right.
And I almost wanted to say to him, I just almost wanted to yell from the second deck where we were, "Hey, Bob, Mr. Kraft, what's going on? How you feel about this?
Now, why hasn't he spoken,
An official
though?
Statement, maybe, sir?"
Well, right. I mean, particularly nothing after Brady left, although we got the only thing we got was through his spokesperson, Stephen A. Smith.
And or the book, The Dynasty. That was his job. I mean, the book was sort of almost like a press release as well. But Stephen A. Smith was the closest thing we had to an immediate press release.
And here's what he said after Brady. They believe this was in March on the 20th or slightly before there when it was clear Brady was leaving. He had made his farewell posting, whatever it was, to New England. Here's what Stephen A. said.
He said that Tom Brady came to his home last night and explained to him why he wanted to leave and that he wanted to leave. He said that Tom Brady is like a son to me. He said, be very, very clear. If Tom Brady wanted to stay, we would have worked it out and he would have remained a New England Patriot. But Tom Brady wanted to leave. And when you give us 20 years of service in the fashion that he did, you've earned the right to do what you want to do.
I mean, I don't think Stephen A. made that up. I don't think he made that up.
No.
But I think...
I don't either.
That's the last we heard from Bob Kraft. He wanted to quickly place the blame on Brady. It was his fault. He chose to leave. We wanted to keep him. Now, I don't know if you find that disingenuous or factual.
See, I've always thought that Brady kind of did want to leave. And it goes back to, of course, them not having offered him a longer-term deal for better money a few years prior. So once he made up his mind... And then, in conjunction with seeing the way the team was evolving, or rather devolving, with the free agents to come, the talent they had brought in, and the difficulty he was having last year, look, if they went 14-2 and they were a freight train, if they were an absolute wagon, maybe he would have considered staying. N'Keal Harry is actually A.J. Brown. Sonny Michel looks like Najee Harris. Like the line stays healthy. The boogeymen are in effect all season long. Maybe Brady says, you know, this would be silly for me to leave just to go get some more money or play, you know, go live in Derek Jeter's house for a couple of years. I'm going to stick this out. Maybe I'll even convince Gronk to come back. It doesn't. He sees that they don't have enough talent. The best he has is broken down Dorsett, N'Keal Harry, Jacoby Myers, who I'm a fan of, and I think we've all seen is definitely a professional wide receiver. And in addition to the fact that he wasn't being given the money, no love, no money, no talent.
Yeah, but
no
they were going to give him some money. I mean, they would give him...
What, $14
million? Okay. I mean, so it's $14 million to stay.
That would look so bad.
Finish like, your legacy
with Russell Wilson
with
getting
team.
$35 million and Tom Brady
that's
getting
what he
$14
always
million.
Did. That was Brady's whole career taking less.
He took less for so long. He deserved a little bit more. We agreed many a time during contentious moments on the Greg Hill Show with you, me, and Curtis fighting like cats and dogs and Greg being Greg. We... went back and forth over the idea that a Drew Brees-style two-year, $50 million deal a while ago would have gotten it done. And Belichick, I don't think, still sore from having to move on from his succession plan of Jimmy Garoppolo, but rather just thinking that at some point or another, he's going to have to move on from Brady, decided, I'm not sinking that money into a 40-some-odd-year-old quarterback.
It was a very Red Sox decision. It was like, we're resetting.
It was a very Belichick decision.
Well, I guess. Yeah, that's been his, right. But I think he also felt like Brady had already accepted the terms of their arrangement, and he was going to do it again for another year or two.
Mm-hmm.
You take less, we'll spend up to the cap, which they didn't this year, but maybe they would have if Brady were back.
And he's no dummy. He surveyed the field. He saw who was coming up, who was going to be moving on, and what might be available. And that's why, to me, to Fourier, to people that were paying attention that just followed Tom Brady to a, you know, almost stalker-like level, saw that Tampa would prove or at least present a more than viable option, a successful option. You have a pre-installed offense that is just waiting for a successful, if not competent, game manager, experienced quarterback to step in. And look, now Brady's going to have the second most touchdowns in his career. He's already thrown for the most touchdowns in Bucs history. They're back in the playoffs for the first time in 13 years and arguably playing their best football of the year at the right time.
Yeah, but I think that, but against who? They're still going to lose in the playoffs. But if they make the NFC title game, that might be considered a win.
That's a win for this season, yes. But if they lose in the division round, I think it's sort of like, well, that the Tom Brady's first year was, and then starts the, well, if he had that talent, I'll tell you what, Jim, if he had that talent but was playing with Bill Belichick as his coach, that's NFC Championship or maybe Super Bowl 55.
Right. So you're going to get that every week. You'll get the you'll get Patriots rubbing salt in the wound every win.
Nonstop. As we sit at home and watch a bunch of guys that we pray shake loose from their team to maybe come rescue the Patriots next year, play meaningful football.
But in hindsight, the Patriots deserve some blame. Actually, I don't blame the Bruins at all for the Chara decision. I think they made the right call. The Red Sox and Mookie, I mean, the Sox were terrible, so bad. But it was like they just decided to take their lumps. And the Mookie decision, I still think, was on Betts. I don't think he wanted to stay here.
I don't think he wanted to stay here.
Especially for what he signed for. So I kind of take them off the hook, but it's a bad loss. I mean,
maybe they could have gotten more. Now, you know, had they gotten Bruzdar Gratterall as opposed to just getting Jeter Downs and
Connor Wong
Verdugo. And Verdugo.
I still like that return.
I mean, it's a decent haul.
Yeah,
the Sox need pitching. Look, the Sox just need to come back next year and be watchable. Watchable is a win.
Yeah.
The W for the Red Sox in 2021, watchable.
But all four franchises are in a bleary state. They don't stink. They're just not championship caliber, and it's got bad 90s vibes to it.
It's a reset to the year 2000. 1999 was really the year where a lot of teams that had been great for so long had to hit the reset button. Like the 1999 Broncos moved on to Brian Griese.
Yeah.
The 1999 Bills moved on from Jim Kelly after all of their playoff successes. Like, get ready to know weird. Get ready to know non-competitive. Get ready to know irrelevant for a while.
Well, it sucks, and that's when you would like to hear from management and particular ownership of the franchises. I don't think John Henry spoke at all during the year, but he did talk before the season began, which is something Kraft didn't do. Obviously, he had the South Florida issue hanging around, so maybe Jonathan should do it. But that is one thing, at a minimum, the Patriots need to do. Get Jonathan Kraft in front of a microphone or at some sort of a off-season powwow with reporters, Mike Reese, whoever it is. Handpick your guy.
Easiest thing to do, you set up the soft landing with Steve Burton, maybe Rochie.
There you go, fine.
Get a little Steve Burton soft landing. Mr. Kraft comes out, talks about how disappointing the season was, but how they understand that between COVID and the opt-outs and where they were against the cap.
Make your
excuses.
He'll
say all the same thing over again and then just tell us that, you know, we've talked with coach, he's got a plan for 2021, and give the Patriots fans who are going to watch their team either finish 7-9 or possibly lose to the Jets tomorrow some hope heading into the offseason and beyond, because right now it looks bleak. Time and time again, Ken, there's three or four talented members on this team. Otherwise, you know, GMs and talent evaluators in the NFC saying, like, I don't know, man, that team's devoid of talent.
And at the quarterback position, things we learned this week, Cam Newton speaking, we'll hear some of that audio later in the show, sounds like a guy who's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Belichick talking on OMF this week, and Michael Lombardi in his big showdown with Bradfo. We'll play some of that for you. It sure sounds like they have checked out on Stidham in a big way. So that means next year is just going to be three new guys. I mean, they're going to bring in three or four new bodies to compete.
Can I make my first bold prediction for 2021? Bold.
The floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you. The New England Patriots roster come September 2021 will look drastically different than it did to start 2020.
Yeah, Belichick pretty much said that in his OMF.
And you've had Jason McCourty, you've had Matthew Slater, you've had many players, not just guys, not just Jags, not just one-year wonders, you know, happy to be here and collect the check during the pandemic. We're talking veterans, Super Bowl champions, saying, like, after a season like this, this is what Bill does.
Yeah.
Don't expect the team to look the same next year.
By the way, supporting your the dynasty as being the press release for the Patriots,
yes.
Our buddy Chris Curtis says every season ticket holder got one, as far as he's aware. His father got a copy of it from RKK, season ticket. So it was like it was a company issue.
See? This is how it went down.
All right, to the phone lines we go. Should Kraft speak? And how about the state of the local sports teams here on Laird and Fitzy? With you until 4 o'clock today. Brian in New London up first. Hello, Brian.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good, you?
Good. So, Bob Kraft, I think he holds a lot of responsibility here. First of all, his character. I think that whole debacle down in South Florida, I think he lost a lot of shine in Tom Brady's eyes. I can't imagine going to work for a guy like that, looking him straight in the face and not laugh, you know?
Yeah, but they flew back, didn't they? Kraft flew on the plane with Brady and Giselle right afterwards. I mean, it didn't seem like they were at odds at all after that incident.
Yeah, but Brady probably already made a decision he was going to check out.
Okay. Mm. Maybe. Well, there was so you think there was a moral factor in Brady leaving?
Brian, is your last name name Easterby?
No. Well, I think there's a component to it. I mean, when you add everything up, the crappy receiving core you had around him, and then, so when you add it all up, that's part of it.
All right, thanks for the call, Brian. I don't believe that's the case. I just think Brady, in the end, he made a pride decision. He felt disrespected. You're right about the money. I mean, that was partly the factor, but also they wanted to go year to year, and he was just he was pushed to the edge.
I still think it's a business decision, and pride played a factor into it, because it always will when you're talking about somebody who will forever see himself as Pick 199. That's the name of the production company with the Russo brothers. I mean, like, now he's unfurling the 9-part docuseries about what it was like to get to all 9 Super Bowls with the Patriots. So he'll never see himself as anything otherwise. And yeah, it factored into the equation. But in the end, this was a business decision for Tom Brady. He looked better in the end and would probably have more fun and make more money and get better stats on the way out the door, not languishing through Keen and Asiasi, but actually having Brate, Gronk, and Godwin.
Yeah, but if he had come back here, you could have brought Gronk with you. You could have, you know, campaigned for better weapons, as he did with Antonio Brown, and they capitulated, as he did for Mohamed Sanu.
He campaigned and they made for the trade all of last year. Belichick gave him everything he wanted last year. It didn't work out.
Right, and he quit and took the ball and
went
on.
I can see why some fans would be mad or a little butthurt over the idea that Brady didn't stick around after they win a Super Bowl, surprisingly, and Belichick sells out to try to give him one great last ride. Antonio Brown, Mohamed Sanu, N'Keal Harry. He threw the book at him.
Right.
He really did. I know Fourier agrees with me, and some people say, like, oh, he gave him no weapons last year. Like, what else did he?
Yeah, no, he tried. I'll give
he
him
tried.
That. I was
signed.
I was
they brought Josh Brown back again, but didn't work.
Jake in Boston.
Oh, boy.
In the state of the 20s.
Happy New Year. Here comes the CNN version of Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen getting high on TV. Hello, Jake.
I'll be Andy Cohen. You could be Anderson Cooper. Gentlemen, for the record, Bob Kraft needs to sit down with Savannah Guthrie or Byron Burnett and talk about Florida first, then Brady second. Okay. Now, with that out of the way, I'm going to tell you why 2 coaches in this town should be fired in one phone call. Number one, as you know, I'm not a fan of Steve Belichick, and nepotism has really ruined the Patriots. But, you know, you brushed off the fact when I called you over the summer and said, you know, hey, Steve's got a kid on the way, coming in November, going to be a distraction, and you kind of poo-pooed it. And it happened, it just happened, and it just came out over the weekend. That kid was born right before the 49ers game. That kid was in the NCIU for 10 days with a bacterial infection, and then the Patriots went out and, what, lost 33-8 to the 49ers? And it wasn't just that. You had Linda had 2 major health scares. One was a tumor. One was the removal of implants this past year. So, you know, the Bill Belichick that disregarded his first marriage, and when Steven got busted for possession and had maybe his best coaching job in 2003, 2004, is no longer with us. And now we have a Bill Belichick who's certainly more focused on family, and that's within his right. But the Bill Belichick legend, the Bill Belichick that we once had in this town that was football over everything, doesn't exist anymore. So we need to put that fantasy aside. That's change number one. Until you get a coach like Sean McVay. Sean McVay has a beautiful, beautiful girlfriend now. I don't know if you've seen this woman. Unbelievable. But you know what? If there's a football game on, she's second fiddle. Now on to the other coach I think should be fired. Listen, I like Brad Stevens. I don't think you move on from Brad without the surefire replacement. But that replacement now exists, and it solves the biggest problem on this team, which is a coach who can alpha and install discipline in your young, super max, millennial brat. And her name is Becky Hammond. Think about it. The Celtics had the first African-American coach of the Big Four sports. That was Bill Russell. Now you could have the first woman, and she can coach for what it's worth. It's not an accident that she's going to get a professional head coaching job. But why you do it is that you weaponize her. You tell her, or you basically show, that she is more powerful than players in a player-run league. She could throw Jason Tatum under the bus. She can make Marcus Smart behave. Jaylen Brown would be an absolute angel because all the media would start comparing Becky Hammon to Jackie Robinson and talk about what a barrier breaker she is. You could even trade for James Harden because James Harden would fall into line because Lord knows there's a circle of blue check marks with her, she in their profiles ready to go to war for Becky Hammon if James Harden wants to act up. They'd ask James Harden about the strip club. They would do everything. But you can also weaponize her against NBA officials because you could have her talking after games, questioning the officiating, and Adam Silver can't do anything. Because once she starts to plant the seed of, I didn't get this call because I'm a woman, she's going to get overcompensated on those calls. And then you could do it in free agency, which may be Danny Ainge's biggest weakness right now, because you could plant that seed. Does player X not want to go to Boston because he's afraid to play for a woman? These guys are so brand conscious. They're so brand centric. They're so social justice heavy that the intimidation of betraying Becky Hammon as coach of the Boston Celtics would make them all fall in line like dominoes, and she'd be the one to do what Brad can't do, which is get that extra something out of these millennial brats and take you to that championship. Fire Brad. I like Brad. Not his fault. Fire Becky Hammon and weaponize her against the NBA.
All right, Jake. There's the first Jake of Boston 21-24.
There we go. Happy New Year, everybody.
I don't think Becky Hammon's ever been a head coach anywhere. That would be my concern. I mean, I have no problem if she's
could Jake
qualified
maybe
and ready.
There's a lot of good points, a lot of tidbits, interesting nuggets that maybe some of us may have been aware of or glossed over in season, like the drama surrounding the birth of the Steve Belichick baby, et cetera.
If it's Belichick, like family.
He is like a private detective.
Right, right. But I will give him this. If you want to criticize the Patriots for Steve Belichick.
Just got a text from one of our producers, Eamon Convey. I get dizzy listening to Jake's calls. Eamon, you're all of us, buddy.
But should they have given Mayo the job over Steve Belichick, the defensive coordinator job? Did that factor in on the season? I mean, forget about the family stuff going on.
The defense
looked good
at times. Yeah, I understand.
I mean, Monday was an embarrassment.
Oh, Monday was awful.
A total embarrassment. They were not only out of sorts, unless they're trying to lose, which, is good this time of year now.
I mean,
maybe they need to pull that off tomorrow. So keep Steve calling the plays.
I hate to tell you, I'm not going to make my pick just yet, but I wouldn't be surprised
if they lose to the Jets.
I would not be surprised.
That of course is the one part of it. The other part is the Jets now have Justin Fields in their sights after last night. So we'll talk about that a little bit. The college football games were interesting last evening. We will get into the big Bradfoe v. Michael Lombardi skirmish from the week. I do think that was. Must replay in terms of at least a portion of it. It was good stuff. Here's what's trending, our first update of the day.
OMF, weekdays from 2 to 6. Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Still COVID issues in the NFL. That's what's trending. Browns facilities closed once again. Confirmed positive test from one of their coaches.
No.
Still for now, though, Browns and Steelers Week 17 game is on, which is huge for Cleveland. I mean, they need to win to clinch.
You got a lot of teams in the AFC. Can you imagine that here we were saying Patriots need to find a way the path, get to 9-7, 10-6 at best, and things will work out. Like, there could be a team with 11 wins that doesn't get in the AFC. First right. since Patriots of 2008. A lot of teams got to win tomorrow, Kenny.
With seven teams getting in. Patriots, Jets will have NFL Sunday starting at 9 a.m. Wiggy, Foyer, and Keefe. The 2-13 Jets are 3-point underdogs. Patriots 3-point favorites. It's tight. It'll be a tight one.
The Patriots have scored. I've made as many touchdowns in Boston in the last month as the Patriots have.
Out for the game, Damian Harris, David Andrews, and Shaq Mason. Mm-hmm. 16 players questionable, so it could be B-team central.
And how about what's going on down in New Orleans? The Saints are going to be without their entire running back room.
My God. And they play, who do the Saints have tomorrow? Carolina. Saints at Carolina. That's a 4 o'clock game. Last night, Notre Dame got mauled 31-14 in the Rose Bowl. Alabama rolls on to the title game. And Ohio State, Justin Fields, 6 touchdown passes, 49-28 upset of Clemson. Title game is January 11th. Alabama 7.5-point favorites. Coverage of the Fiesta Bowl. Iowa State and Oregon coming up today. And then at 8, it's the Orange Bowl, Texas A&M, and North Carolina. We'll have those games here on 93.7 FM in Boston. Celtics dropping another frustrating one last night, 96-93. Tatum and Brown good in the second half, but not good enough. They all stunk late. Celtics Pistons tomorrow at 3. That's what's trending on Laird and Fitzy on WEI.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy.
Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
More of what you want to hear. Laird and Fitzy on EEI.
Four-man rush. Fields has time. Launches downfield. It's Olave. He's got a touchdown. 8 minutes. Looking to add to it. Fields down the field. Caught for a touchdown. Jameson Williams. From the pocket, a strike across the middle. Caught. Touchdown. Rucker again. What a huge night for the tight ends. And for Fields. Fields on the run. Launches for the end zone. Coming back. Caught for a touchdown by Olave. And the Buckeyes stretch the lead. And Fields kind of limping to the sidelines, still not right.
Showed some toughness, took a big hit, and also six, count them, six TDs thrown by Ohio State's Justin Fields. That is the apple of Wiggy's eye and has been for some time. And may now be the apple of the New York Jets' eye and their new general manager, Joe Douglas. They've got the second pick in the draft locked up. Of course, they blew the first pick. An amazing late season, what the hell?
And could easily have three wins on the season if for Greg Williams calling the zero blitz against the Raiders.
Yeah, good point. I guess in hindsight, that doesn't matter so much now. But it's just, as I tweeted last night before the game, the Jets blowing it with Trevor Lawrence makes up for a lousy season in New England, except now for the fact that maybe Justin Fields goes there and is the better player. I've been a little skeptical of him all year. He's Ohio State hasn't played that many games. But the games that I saw, he's looked terrible at times. Mm-hmm. He's had some clunkers.
Yep.
Last night, obviously, was spectacular. So
he got hammered by that safety that got tossed from the game for targeting.
Skalski, whatever his name is.
Skalski. Whoa, he took a shot.
Which,
in
by
the
way, should that have been ejectable? Like,
The debate last night. Oh, my God. The takes that were raging about, that's a football play. I'm so embarrassed.
I mean, he shouldn't be thrown out of the game for it. He didn't hit him in the head. It was a...
No, but the rule clearly states if the crown of the helmet is used in any capacity or part of the tackle, then that's targeting in college football.
Yeah,
so
fine, but
change the rule. Well, the referees are just following the rule to the letter of the law.
Right. Okay. Fine. But I mean, you should be ejected off one.
No,
the guy's an open field runner. So stuff happens.
He didn't like spear him. Like to me, there's a difference between targeting and spearing, and I think that they should rewrite the rule a little bit so that you can have a clearer interpretation depending on what happens in the game, as opposed to, sorry, this is what it says, so you got to go, guy.
Yeah.
That said, The fact that his kidney didn't explode or that his hip didn't pop out, that he stayed in the game, was wincing in pain as he was making touchdown throws. But then later in the game, Ken, in the second half, as Clemson is trying to claw back in, and Trevor Lawrence is looking pedestrian at times, certainly not like a Heisman front runner or the number one draft pick, Fields is launching 60-yard bombs that are dropping in the basket.
But here's why,
time and again.
Like, if you're an NFL evaluator, obviously you got to factor in level of competition, and you look beyond just the numbers. You don't just look and say, okay, Fields threw for 400 yards, six touchdowns, we're taking him with the first pick. Was he, like, under pressure at all last night? Because, like, he sat...
Not much.
There was nobody around him.
No, they couldn't generate a pass rush for love, sex, or money last night.
So, great. So, if he's got no pressure, he can deliver in a big way. That's not nothing.
But, you know, he can move, too. That's the thing. He didn't have to move as much, and obviously his mobility was hampered after he took that shot.
I mean... Bottom line, though, he's gone well before the Patriots have a chance to draft him. He's going to go top five.
But Fields going two, pushing a lot of talent down the board. If Lawrence still stays one and goes to Jacksonville and Fields goes two to the Jets,
right,
that does put another good quarterback to groom for the next several years into the AFC. That just makes it that much more important that the Patriots get their quarterback situation right now. Because if you're looking at Josh Allen, who's entering his prime and looks great, Tua learning on the fly. I know the jury is still out on him. I'm more of a Tua believer than some others around here. And if you get Justin Fields in there as well, and the Patriots are like, hey, we got Case Keenum and the other guy.
Yeah, but...
Pats are up the creek.
I guess we shouldn't say it's a done deal that the Jets will take a quarterback, because whoever the new coach is and the Jets' ability to screw it up, is it possible they would keep Sam Darnold and just figure, like, with a new regime, we can salvage him?
I give it
like a 2% chance.
I give it a 10% chance.
Oh, okay, good. But so, 2%, so you agree with me.
2% is a joke. I mean, 10% is like there's no chance, but there's a little bit of a chance.
Because he was the third pick of the 2018 draft.
People all the time. Look what Cliff Kingsbury did. They had the first pick. They had a quarterback in the top 10 the year before, and he said, yeah, it's not
right,
my guy.
Right.
Well, goes first overall, takes his guy, and they made the right call.
They should, but it's the Jets. So, okay, let's say he goes there. So,
okay, other picks that could go to the Jets there could be Micah Parsons, the linebacker from, if it's a defensive-oriented coach, maybe he trades back a little bit. If there's somebody else who's like, we want Justin Fields.
Well, totally. That would be, I mean, they would get a boatload of capital, draft capital. Somebody would trade up to two and take
you could get
Fields.
Maybe a one and a couple of twos or another one. Yep. And for the Jets, who need a lot of talent, kind of like the Patriots, part of me thinks that if the Patriots pull off the sextuple loss factor scenario tomorrow and can get into 10 or 9, that they would benefit as much from trading out, getting another quarterback, and getting multiple picks.
Yeah, so you were telling me this off the air. The Patriots currently pick 14th, but there is a scenario where they could be top 10 by the end of tomorrow.
So check this out. Tomorrow, the Patriots could move up to the 9th overall pick if they lose to the Jets, if the Chargers beat the Chiefs, if the Broncos beat the Raiders, if the Lions lose to the Vikings, if the Giants lose to the Cowboys, and if the Saints lose to the Panthers.
I mean, I guess all those things are possible, given that certain teams are, like, resting players. Like, the Chiefs are not going to play anybody
The Lions
tomorrow.
Stink, period, and I don't even think they have Stafford. The Giants could easily lose to the Cowboys, who I think are going to take the NFC least. The Saints don't have a running back tomorrow, and there's not much they can do to improve their playoff stat. Broncos beating the Raiders, doable. Chargers beating the Chiefs, who are resting Mahomes, doable. Jets beating the Patriots tomorrow, doable.
I agree. I mean, especially without Shaq Mason and David Andrews. So whoever.
And 16, and no Damian Harris, and 16 other guys banged up as well, Ken.
Right, half the team.
They're
might be
a mash unit.
All right, so let's say they get in the top 10. What would Belichick do? Would they really go after Zach Wilson?
If he falls to them at that point.
Or trade up to 5 and get him or something like that?
I could see, okay, so, I mean, Devonta Smith would just immediately change the entire passing game. You see that kid? The Slim Reaper? Woo!
He is so thin, though. Doesn't he scare you just from, like, he's going to get broken in half? I mean, obviously, he's...
Well, you know what? He's not going to last, because he's going to end up going third overall to the Dolphins, because they've got Houston's pick.
Yeah.
Those sons of...
Right.
Falcons at 4. I could see them maybe taking a quarterback, unless maybe to develop behind Matt Ryan, maybe sort of do like a Jordan Love kind of scenario.
Okay.
They have many other needs, and we'll see if Raheem Morris, if Raheem Morris gets the job and he's a defensive coordinator, gets the head coaching gig he interviewed this past week, maybe he takes a Micah Parsons. Cincinnati is begging for Penei Sewell. That's a person's
tackle.
Name.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then you get to 6 with the Eagles. Now they have a quarterback already. 7, the Lions. They definitely they're going to take a quarterback.
So you got to get ahead of Detroit. That's the thing. You got to trade up.
You
got to
get ahead
six.
Of Carolina. That's the issue. You have to
They're going
to
keep Teddy B. You think they're?
No. I could easily see.
They sunk a lot of money into him.
Now the Panthers. Yeah. So what? They can move on from Bridge guy.
I guess.
Perfectly fine. He's Teddy Two Gloves is a steady Freddy. He's not going to do anything overly spectacular. He's also not going to lose you games, you know, with a Dell Home-esque five or six interceptions.
It just doesn't seem likely that Belichick would trade whatever it takes to get from 14 to 7 or something like that to get Zach Wilson. Or
that's for me and the other fanboys and the other super fans to be out there just going like, come on, Belichick, do it, Zach Wilson.
I think he may stick wherever they are and just take the Bama quarterback. Take Saban's guy. Take Mac Jones.
Patriots. You could get Mac Jones
later. He
just
trusts whatever Saban says he does.
Well, you saw the Albert Breer story in Sports Illustrated about Bill Belichick listening to his buddies, the coaches, as opposed to the scouts who put in all the work for months and years at a time. And they were all like, hey, we love these three receivers, Brown, Metcalf, Samuel. And he's like, my friend told me Nikhil Harry's good. So
what a bust.
What an absolute bust.
That really is. Lou on the Cape on the phone lines. Hello, Lou.
Hey, guys, how you going today?
Good. What's up, buddy?
Oh, outstanding. As a lifelong Cleveland Browns fan, I don't want to sound like I'm on my high horse, so please don't take it like that. But I think Belichick, the GM, he's in the greatest situation ever because he almost can't miss on anybody he picks. And the reason why I say that, if he's picking the receiver, go for the receiver. You want a pass rusher? They use that too. You want a linebacker? Use that too. How about a guy in the secondary? Just one other guy. Use that too. How about a running back?
Lou, your phone's cutting out. You sound like you're talking into your hand.
Lou, just make sure you're talking to the receiver, buddy.
I'm sorry. You guys have me?
There we go.
You're saying he can't lose because they need every position.
Right. They need every position, so you almost can't miss. Round 1 through 7, you got to pick a guy, and you need him everywhere. So Belichick, the GM, he's happy as heck right now. And yeah, he's ecstatic. You can't miss this year, guys.
If they don't take a quarterback, Lou, fans won't feel that way, right?
But I mean, we're football guys, Ken. I listen to you guys all the time. You know how football works. And as far as taking that kid out of Alabama, he's surrounded by blue chippers. Alabama guys have never been good since maybe Joe Namath.
Fields.
I think that guy might be Fields. I'm sorry?
So is Fields, though. Look at that line last night. I mean, he was not breathed on.
Sir, Fields, did you see the talent? Like him and the guy for Clemson? I don't care who you put around those guys. They're going to play good. But the quarterback for Alabama, he just has the benefit of having blue chippers all around him. And I think that's the knock on him.
All right. Thanks for the call, Lou. I mean, the games early in the year where I saw Fields, he threw three picks in the Indiana game. That was a terrible game.
Squeaked that one out.
He's had six picks on the year, threw two picks in the Northwestern game. He was not good in that one. I mean, who knows? He can't.
He threw a head scratcher of a pick last night. He just happened to throw a number outstanding intermediate and deep balls last night. Playing through what must have just been absolutely epic levels of pain.
I mean, I would definitely take him. He's just not a lock. That's for sure.
That makes him the perfect Jets quarterback then. And look, and I've heard the argument. Fourier's made this argument in QB debates, as have others around here, that these Alabama quarterbacks, more often than not, are just products of the talent around them, that anybody would look good with Najee Harris and Devonta Smith and Jalen Waddle, who they obviously lost a while ago, but is still probably going to go somewhere in the first 20 picks in the NFL draft. So that's the deal for these Bama quarterbacks. They just don't end up panning out because they're not that great. They don't have to carry the team. Could that be the case for Tua? It was for McCarron. It was for McElroy. Is Mac Jones just another one from that camp, or is there enough Joe Burrow-like talent?
Yep.
Tall, smart kid, moves well, good arm, seems to always make the right read. That's the kind of guy, if the Patriots decide to go the I'm not going to throw him to the Wolves next year QB pick, that's the kind of guy I hope they would get. Draft him, maybe second round, let him sit, learn from behind, insert name of dependable, possibly bearded quarterback here, and start building for your future, because quarterback's the most important need, but it's not the only one.
And they've obviously moved on from Stidham. That became clear this week. You got to hear what Michael Lombardi said. And the exchange with Bradford. We'll play some of that coming up, and Rob can give his perspective on it, because obviously Michael Lombardi very tied in with Belichick, and his son is on the staff. So I think you got a real reveal of how the organization feels about the QB spot, and Stidham in particular. We'll have some of that up next on Laird and Fitzy.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
We're right back to it. This is Laird and Fitzy on EEI.
You have the same question every week, Luke. Yeah, every week you ask if something's changed.
It has changed, though, because you guys have been eliminated, right? So maybe you look at Stidham the last 2 weeks?
Okay.
I don't know if it's Stidham's not showing what he needs in practice. Once you're eliminated, to give him a couple games just to see what he looks like in a game as a starter.
Yeah, great point, Luke.
Oh, that may have been the soundbite of the year. Forget about Belichick saying we sold out. And then Lou calling him a big baby the next day. It was good stuff. Belichick obviously has reappeared on OMF and did so again this week. Actually, he was quite humble. His final...
very different. I listened to it in the car. I was riding down to Connecticut, and I'm listening. I'm thinking, wow, this is a different Belichick than last week. Yeah. Now, that final interview, because they figured that would be his exit interview in advance of the Jets game,
mm-hmm.
that was with Tanger.
Diossi and Foyer.
So mm-hmm. that was different. You got two former players in there, a lot of respect, and it seems like even though Tangway wrote that piece on EEI.com a little while ago saying that Belichick is not the man for the rebuild, there really wasn't any friction there.
Yeah, I don't know what the relationship with Lou and Belichick has been, a little icy all year, you know, but I think Lou had every right to ask the question, obviously. It's like things had changed. You had come to a different scenario after the loss to Miami. You're mm-hmm. done. It's officially over, so why not go to Stidham? It got testy there. Now, Michael Lombardi was on with Bradfoe mm-hmm. and Barrett this week, filling in for OMF.
Oh, the B&B connection.
And this got quite spicy, and I want your reaction to this, because it's... Lombardi, I think, sometimes talks as if he knows more than he does. He's not been in the organization for a while, but then again, his son is there, so I'm sure he knows a few things.
Well,
Nick Lombardi, the receivers coach.
Yes, so he's got family in the organization, yep. and... There are many who still believe that Lombardi has Belichick's ear, that he's always sort of been a conciliary type to, you know, Godfather
right.
Belichick.
Right. So Bradfoe brought up the question of, you know, hey, Mike, what do you make of Bill's response to Lou when he asked those questions? And here was the exchange.
I wanted to ask you this because I know that obviously you know Bill Belichick so well. And about a week and a half ago, Bill was on with OMF, and him and Lou got into a little bit about questions about Cam Newton and not really answering the question. And it raised a lot of the conversation about how Bill talks to the media and deals with the media and what he gives to the media. You've been with him for a long, long time. Can you give any sort of insight into that, into when he wants to say something, when he doesn't want to say something, why he's so short sometimes like he was like a week and a half ago?
Well, I mean, I think Lou's asking a question that he's really given the answer to numerous times. And Lou, you know, I'm not questioning Lou's football intelligence or his knowledge of the game, but you're talking to the guy who's won 6 Super Bowls. He's been in 8. He watches Jarrett Stidham practice. You know, if he thought Jarrett Stidham gave him a better chance to play, he would play him. Like that's the reality. He would play him. Like, he didn't in his 20 years as the head coach of the New England Patriots. Has he ever not done what's best for the team? Has he ever demonstrated that he doesn't do what's best for the team? And, you know, and if you want to take offense to he didn't answer your question, well, he's been answering it. His actions answer it. He watches practice tape. Lou doesn't. He watches the team every day. Lou doesn't. Lou just wants to go to the next quarterback because that's the next thing to do.
Like, Mike, in fairness, the conversation had changed because – because you are now eliminated from the playoffs. You had nothing to play for. You obviously have a quarterback in Cam Newton who can't throw a football. And we haven't seen Jarrett Stidham, and they haven't seen Jarrett Stidham. They've seen him in
practice.
They've seen him in practices. But we can admit, Mike, that probably there is an element of value to seeing the guy play in real games, right?
Have you ever had to stand in front of your team and tell them we're going to play a guy that can't play because the media wants to see him? Good luck being a head coach when you do that. Like, seriously, you got to stand in front of your team and say, this guy gives us the best chance to win. And they're going to look around and say, wait a minute, he can't even complete a ball in practice. And I'm not saying that's Stidham. I'm not saying that's what Stidham does.
But Cam Newton can't complete a ball either, Mike.
The job of the head coach is to be able to value the team. In practice, maybe he looks a lot better than he does in the game.
Well,
I don't know that.
Well,
I think it's hard for me to sit here and second guess a guy who's won 6 Super Bowls that watches practice, and you haven't.
But
you haven't watched one practice. You haven't seen Jarrett Stidham play, and yet all of a sudden you're the expert on Jarrett Stidham, and the head coach who's won 6 Super Bowls isn't. You want to see him play because it'll help you for next year? Like, how's that going to help you for next year?
You don't think it was a fair question that now that a guy is eliminated, that
what?
You try somebody else out?
It was a fair question. He's been answering the question for
no,
how
it's,
long?
No, it's a completely different question because they hadn't been eliminated from the playoffs.
But the question whether he's eliminated or not, I mean, if they were eliminated and Brady was still the quarterback, would you ask that question?
If Brady was playing like Cam Newton, absolutely. I mean, Cam Newton can't throw a football. Mike, they were down 31-9. With 9 minutes left.
The games too.
Right, exactly.
Saying Cam can throw it, but I'm saying to you is you've never watched Jarrett Stidham practice. You don't know what he's doing. And you can't stand in front of a team. You're the head coach. You're in charge of the football team. You've got to be able to stand in front of the team and say, this guy deserves the right to play, and I'm going to bench a guy who's the team leader of the team, who everybody on the team loves. Everybody loves him because I want to bench him, even though this guy's not earned it.
Okay, so how
the program is built on earning your job.
How does he stand in front of the team then? And you saying that Jarrett Stidham can't throw a ball in practice? Fine, like you're right. Well, we don't see him.
He must be saying that.
Okay, so with 31-9 with 9 minutes left to go in the third quarter, you bring in a guy who clearly can't throw the ball. You hand the ball off 3 times and then punt because he can't throw the ball. How do you stand in front of the team and say, well, this is the best route to go? And so if that's not the best route to go, and the guy can't throw the football, then why not try the other guy out? Which, by the way, they did in the next series. So it was a legitimate question at the time, but he just didn't answer it. That's all I'm saying, is that why doesn't he just answer it saying, yeah, you know what? You know, Jarrett Stidham, you know, he needs to work on some things. We want to see Cam a little bit more. I think it's a fair question.
Well, I mean, I think he's given the answer numerous times. I mean, it's fair. Why don't you know, you're asking me. I think you should ask Coach Belichick.
I know. I just can't buy into the whole he's won so much and he can't be asked these questions and he can't answer them.
Be asked. I couldn't be. You're questioning his judgment. You have no right to question his judgment.
You
don't know enough about football to question his judgment.
In that scenario, tell me where I'm wrong.
Now, you can ask him questions. You can ask him questions. You got every right to do that. But nobody on that station has any right or any knows more about football than he does. There's just no way.
Bill Belichick has never made a mistake that he should be questioned on.
I didn't say that.
You just did.
I said your knowledge is not going to be the same as his. There's just no way.
Okay, so
it's the scenario. You're going to make me laugh.
The scenario that I just painted. Down 31-9 with 9 minutes left to go. You hand the ball off 3 times, and then you bring in Jarrett Stidham. Like, that's not worth a question. I have no right to ask Bill Belichick that question.
I didn't say you didn't. I didn't say. But when you start talking about he should be playing players, you don't know.
I didn't say that.
You can ask any question you want, but you can't question. I said you're questioning his judgment. Like, when you want to question somebody's judgment, that means you think you know more than they do.
It does?
There's no chance. It's comical.
Bill Belichick.
It would be like me walking into a heart surgeon and saying, you know, you should really think about moving that valve just an eighth of an inch. Seriously.
Oh, really? I mean, like, honestly, like, it's Bill Belichick.
You have no idea. You have no idea.
I mean, I do know.
You have no idea.
So, Mike, you're GM, correct? And you make a bad trade. You make a bad draft pick. I should not question that because you know more than I did?
I didn't say that.
I mean, what are we talking about here?
I would be the first guy to say. I'm saying your question is judgment on who we should play. That's what I'm talking about. You're asking me, ask him.
We're doing this 360 here. That's what I was saying. That's the only question that I had. And fine, but that was the only question that they asked, is that I asked about knowing Bill Belichick, why that conversation unfolded, and, you know, through all the debate that we had, Mike, it's fine. It's all good.
I've answered it numerous times. His actions tell you everything you need to know.
It's all good.
So that is Bradfo, the Michael Lombardi on OMF earlier this week. Got spicy. Your reaction to that, sir?
Let's do it on the other side.
The big tease.
Big market. You know, honestly, there's a lot to unpack there.
A lot to unpack. I mean,
that's Chewy.
First of all, Bradfo, Chewy's the name of Bradfo's dog, by the way. He brought the Jamarcus Russell card. It was hanging there. He almost flipped it over. You were a GM. I could bring a pick you regret. Decided not to. But really, don't you believe that basically is how the Patriots organization feels about the way that interview with Lou Merloti went?
I feel like Michael Lombardi there was doing his best to represent his friend and the organization, and that is reflective of how they feel. However, there's starting to be some frustration from people tied to or associated with the team over the picks and the decisions that have been made. And this could be coming to a head pretty soon, because
what
Lombardi says, you know, you don't know as much about football as Bill Belichick. That's comical. You're going to make me laugh. Okay, I get that. But when Mike Lombardi said, and I like Mike Lombardi as a talking head. I know he knows a ton about football. He's done great stuff for this organization. Caveat, disclaimer. But when he says, has Bill Belichick ever done anything not in the best interest of this organization? I mean, why didn't Bradfo just say, like, you know what, actually, if you're going to work silly, then we should just stop this? Because the Malcolm Butler card right there,
yeah.
And ball game's over.
And a million GM decisions.
Done for personal reasons.
Of course you can question his judgment. That's the job.
It's the name of the game. That's what we do. We're fans. No, I don't know as much about football as Bill Belichick, but I'm allowed to legitimately wonder why he continues to start somebody who has had a difficult time picking up the system, looks physically hampered, has a hard time throwing a football. Last time I checked, that was one of the prerequisites of the job of being a quarterback, and has only been able to engineer one touchdown drive in 3.5 games.
Now, we saw a little bit of Stidham Monday night, and obviously maybe Lombardi and Belichick are right. Stidham just stinks.
He looks okay one play. Like, he makes a good check at the line, audibles out of a play, gets into something nice, throws a better ball, obviously. But that play where he decided to, like, pull a Brady and chuck it in the dirt to live to see another play, except he threw it so hard it went behind him. So technically it was a lateral, and if Buffalo decided to review that play, they would have gotten the ball and a touchdown.
Well, the thing that is most interesting to me...
They both suck, and Belichick has really done a bad job with the quarterback position the last 18 months.
But could you see the last 5 years of Belichick's
coaching tenure, that
this is like the norm? You cannot question Belichick's judgment on anything otherwise.
He's won six Super Bowls.
Right, that's okay, the problem. Well,
someone who helped him win those six Super Bowls isn't here anymore. And while we can both say that the person who was more responsible between the two, if we're going to play that game, everyone's favorite, was it Belichick or was it Brady? Coming up next on Sports Talk. In Super Bowl 53, it probably was more Belichick than Brady. In Super Bowl 51, hate to say it, it was a lot more Brady than it was Belichick.
All right, 617.
That's how it goes.
779-7937. What did you think of Michael Lombardi's appearance on the OMF show?
Good job, Bradfo, by the way.
Very good job, Bradfo. Very animated. He was starting to get rattled at the end, but that's fine.
I like that.
Good passion.
For him.
And we're going to bring Bradfo on for his take on it. But once your calls, is Michael Lombardi speaking for the organization? And, you know, was Belichick right? Was Stidham just a waste of time even discussing that he should be in? Hour 2 of Laird and Fitzy on the way.